Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and welcome to our panel discussion for this Monday morning. It is the 30th of March. It's very nice to have you with us. 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Hopefully your weekend was a safe one. It was one where maybe you got to see people or talk to people, not maybe see them in person, but got to talk to them and help with a little bit of the cabin fever that many of us are suffering. Hopefully you just had a nice weekend and we're able to relax a little bit. Meanwhile, we're glad that you're with us this morning. We're glad that we can talk about what's going on in the world, and we're glad that we have this forum with you. We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I'll give you some of the rules in a second. Let me introduce everybody first, and then we'll get started. I begin first and foremost with WAMC's Alan Chalk. How are you, my friend?
Hardly foremost. I'm fine, Joe, and we're all in this together, and we're all neighbors. And you know, this radio station has become the sort of go-to get-together place, and I'm delighted. And I have to report that there's a certain amount of money that's coming in. People are really saying, look, Alan, you asked for it. You want to keep this thing going. We'll send something to WAMC.org. And they are. And we so appreciate it. We really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And it's WAMC.org. And you can check out there and you can see. And it's really been quite lovely to see the support that we've been getting over these past couple weeks, days and weeks. So thank you for that. Political consultant Libby Post is on the phone. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm all right. How's the end
of
session treating you? Well, not the end of session, but budget time.
Oh, well, we'll find out in the next few days. I don't expect there to be any capital money, unfortunately. But, you know, we have to all recognize that this budget is an anomaly because of what we're going through, and we just have to take care of
it. Feels
the
like everything.
Priorities.
Yeah, it feels like everything's an anomaly, right?
I mean,
The governor is saying there are going to be cuts that you wouldn't believe. I mean,
there's going to be cuts everywhere, and
I mean,
it's totally understandable. So
there were $6 billion in the hole in New York State. And now, and that was somewhat fuzzy. Nobody really knew it, but now it's much, much more than that.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thank you for being here, Libby. I appreciate it as always. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning.
Nice to have you here as always.
People are dying and suffering, so you can't really complain, but I hate being inside. I want to go outside, even if it's just into a garden. The weather is not cooperating. The news is glum. Ugh. I'm having a hard time being upbeat.
Yeah.
I almost called
you. That's usually such a natural state for me.
I almost called you yesterday.
Yeah, this is true.
Almost called you yesterday, Rosemary, because the Me Channel, I believe it was, did an extraordinary thing. They had gun smokes on from morning until night with no interruption.
Oh, you
whatsoever.
Should have called me.
An all-day marathon. It's the best ever.
I did not know this. I find that, you know, it's like retirement. It's supposed to be a time like now where you're inside and you catch up and reflect and not do very much. But there's this pressure to use it as enrichment. I have a friend who's like taking piano lessons online. Someone's learning how to play the banjo. Someone's reading 800 books. I'm sleeping.
Cool.
We're glad you're awake for this. And we have our good friend James Ketterer on the phone. He is currently the Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University in Cairo. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing as well as it can be expected, though I'm sorry I missed the Gunsmoke Marathon.
Aren't we
I'm
all?
Sure it'll come around again, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it comes around again and again and again.
I always say it
has since 1957.
You know, I told a story the other day, Jim, on the air to our morning meeting, which we have every day at 7:50. I told the story, and I said, I'm going to tell you the story of Steve Solander. Now, he's an obscure figure in my past, and Joe said, oh, I like that one. That's like
my favorite
story. Oh, yeah, I've seen this one before.
But I always enjoy it. Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for being here. Glad we're all gathered. And by the way, whose cat is there? Who has the cat?
It's Ira. Ira, who's like 21 and skin and bones, wants to sit on my lap. And then I've got Shayna, who wants to go out. So at a break, I'm going to have to take her out, and I might be gone for a little longer.
We don't mind hearing from Ira. That is fine. That is okay.
Okay.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
I was wondering who mic'd the cat.
Yeah, no. He's just really loud.
Okay. Well, hopefully
we'll... Demanding.
Hopefully we'll have Ira purring by the end of the show.
Yeah.
And you too, listeners. It's panel at WAMC.org. Just remember to keep your letters short and to the point and on topic. You know, we get a lot, I've been saying this for the last couple of days, but we've been getting a ton more letters than we normally get. So please, if we don't read your letter, don't hate us. We don't have time for everybody. We get just a fraction on the air of what we actually get. One per customer, if you can just write once a day, that's fantastic. Some people just write maybe 9, 10, 12, every 10 minutes or so. So if you don't do that. And
yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. And finally, just make sure they're to panel at WAMC.org. And we're only going to read them while we're on the air. So if you write either before or after, we're not going to read those letters on the air. It's only during the conversation. Oh, and one other thing about the letters, I don't want this to sound like it's just a gripe session, but just one more thing about the letters. If you feel that people are asking us questions like how should I invest my money, which I do in the stock market, I am a small business, do I apply? We don't know. We really don't. We would love to tell you, but I think you're probably better off Googling it. So,
well, getting in touch with your congressional.
Yeah, that's right. We're just fine. So, yeah. But we don't know the answer a lot of times to these questions. And people are saying, you know, well, does this strain of virus, will this last, you know, on my genes? How long? Well, we don't know. We have no idea. So those kinds of questions are better for a science forum than they are for us. But we thank you very much anyway. So with all of that said, we love your letters. WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. All right. Let's go to what is happening in the world. Where is it? Oh, this was the alert I got earlier. It said coronavirus. What to know today? Fatalities mount in Europe and the United States despite lockdowns. Okay, check. Also, and then, of course, as that happened, my phone. Okay, yes. Fatalities mount in Europe and the United States despite lockdowns. Investors brace for another wild week. And Trump tweets about TV ratings as the death toll climbs. So those are three of the headlines. Meanwhile, the big one that came out of the press briefing last night is that the president has extended the social distancing guidelines to April 30th. You may remember just a week ago, he was saying that he wanted the country raring to go by Easter, then backed off that a little bit and said, you know, maybe in some areas it could be by Easter, we'll have it going by Easter. And now, thankfully, listened to scientists and said we're now going to extend social distancing guidelines to April 30th. Meanwhile, the global count has passed 700,000, and there is a lot going on. The Anthony Fauci yesterday said that 200,000 Americans could die even if the U.S. takes aggressive action. That was said yesterday.
And the president said that was good news.
Well, he said, and then he downplayed it to 100,000 yesterday.
He said that was good news.
That was good news.
Can you imagine? I mean, I watched that thing last night. It was so disturbing. My stomach was upset just watching that guy. CNN has done a very interesting thing now, as you probably know, Joe. They are now fact-checking everything he says in the briefings and running a scroll underneath "this isn't true."
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
I sort of want like that a chyron of just the big stamp over, you know, like the New York Times would say lie or partially untrue or misleading, and that would be helpful, with different font colors. I think would be nice.
Well, I would add ones like annoying, petty, and childish.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You're right. You're right, Rosemary. Yeah. His attack on CNN last night, I was sitting there with my mouth
ridiculous.
Open.
Ridiculous, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
When he called reporters asking questions, don't be a cutie pie.
Well, you know, he called the black reporters, you people. I mean, the man is unhinged, has no idea what he's doing. He's incompetent. He's causing death. I mean, you know, it's and then you have people like Jerry Falwell, right, Jr., reopening Liberty University.
Horrible, yeah. Apparently, though, those labels are needed because, as we've seen, polls, and there's some discussion about how accurate they can be at this time, they still show his approval rating not just staying stable, but going up.
Yeah. Nah, not really.
Oh, no, that's
and
what they show.
You can't really depend on the one-shot polls.
Well,
you
these
know.
Aren't one-shot polls. I think his numbers are going up because people are scared. And at a time when people are scared, they gravitate towards authoritarian personalities. I think that we've seen it in Italy. We've seen it in, with Stalin and Hitler. I mean, that's what happens. People go there.
You know, Fareed Zakaria on his Sunday program brought on the Prime Minister of Singapore, which, of course, is a much smaller country. I take that into account, of course. But they've taken every measure possible, and they're using all these innovations as they track contacts to put into a technology where everybody is who's been pinpointing people who have the case, so you can tell where the hotspots are on a device on your phone. Sort of innovative, imaginative, useful stuff that Americans used to do. It's happening in Singapore now, not in the United States. And that's on Trump. That is on Trump.
You know, how would you like to be Anthony Fauci now? I mean, you know, he's got guts. He's really shown the way. But, you know, Trump, for some reason, and I say for some reason, hasn't fired him yet. But I guarantee you, sooner or later, he will.
Yeah, I think he must be looking for a way to go after him. I on the other hand, have lost respect for Deborah Burke, who...
Oh, my God.
She just sounds like a mouthpiece. Just
she's a tool now. She's just
a
tool.
By the way, I didn't have it in the beginning. I don't know if you guys remember, but days ago I was saying, she's sitting there nodding her head like a puppy dog every time that guy says anything, Trump says anything.
And yet she must be having some effect because she's the one who asked about that ridiculous Easter deadline these set up, said, look, we're just going to look at the data. We owe it to the president. We'll let the data do the talking. And indeed, he dropped that idea and just threw it out the window last night. Said, oh, no, I only meant that aspirationally.
Which is the word the Fauci
might be
used.
Having, maybe she's one of those adults in the room having an effect, but that we're not aware of.
Well, maybe shmaybe, but the fact is, but the fact of the matter is that I agree with your earlier sentiment that she has turned out to be a major apologist for this president. Fauci, on the other hand, is able to keep things balanced in a way that people know where he's coming from, and he's not standing there nodding up and down like a puppy dog.
Jim?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, I'm also amidst all of this. You know, thinking about the things that we're not hearing from our commander in chief. I was just yesterday reading some reports and articles on the U.S. military as all this is happening. You know, this is our armed forces don't often have the luxury of social distancing or working remotely or et cetera. And, you know, the transmission rate apparently has been very high. Though it's not clear exactly what it is, I think they have to be careful for national security reasons to release all of that data. But it's a serious problem on the military's operations, on their readiness. You know, we have bases, installations, presence around the world in many, many locations. And we can then also include our embassies around the world. These are the sorts of things that you have to be able to keep your eye on that are, you know, as serious gets in a dangerous world. I mean, you know, North Korea just did another test launch on a missile the other day. And so we're not hearing anything about that in these press briefings. We're not hearing anything from the commander in chief on these critically important things. And instead, we're hearing about how he thinks his TV ratings are doing. It's not only absurd, it's deeply disturbing.
I think equally disturbing, deeply disturbing, is the lack of any discussion of the dead, of the people in this country, in the United States. We're over 2,400 people. You know, that's obviously a lot of people, and it's affecting a lot of people, especially when you have 140,000 cases in the country. So the fact that that isn't mentioned, I think, is troubling. Also troubling is this back and forth. I know this president is known for kind of floating these trial balloons and see how they go. But this thing over the weekend in talking to reporters about a quarantine for all of New York, New Jersey, and parts of Connecticut, and the firestorm that set off, then the governor saying Governor Cuomo saying it's not possible, it's not enforceable, it's not helpful. Then the president coming out several hours later after a meeting with the task force, his corona task force, and saying we're not going to do quarantines. We are instead going to have a CDC travel restriction, which seems very different to me. And then yesterday apparently had said, well, maybe we should look into quarantines again. This sort of back and forth seems very troubling from someone who, you know, is in a leadership position.
Yeah, and it has real consequences. I mean, we see, you know, cases now where in Rhode Island, they're stopping people with New York plates. They're going to houses and looking for people who are from New York. You have one state pitted against another state, and you have these confusing and contradictory messages from the leadership at the federal level. It's a playbook for like all of what not to do in the middle of a crisis.
We're going to take a break and we'll talk about other playbook measures and take your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, the 30th of March. And we thank you very much for being with us. Well, I want to get to some letters. We'll start off there. And we welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We go to Bob, who says, it's very disheartening to hear the Republicans cry that we're all in this together once they become sick. I'm loving Nancy and Andrew and WAMC. They give me hope. Nick says, kudos to the White House press corps. In the face of belligerent lying from the president, the White House press corps maintains their composure. I don't think I'd be able to do that job and not tell the president that he was a liar.
You know, that was interesting yesterday when he went after CNN and the reporters the way that he did, Joe. And they really did keep their composure. I don't know that I could have done it.
Yeah, Jamie Dimon did a great job in that and kept on saying, well, I have the exact quote that you said. And he just kept on the president.
Bloviating.
Yes, that is. I think that is the scientific term, yes.
You remember the guy in the
adrenaline keeps going when you're under attack like that. You know that the more calm you are, the more upset he's getting, you win that way. So I don't think it was hard for them. I think it's sport, and they were enjoying it, and they did a really good job.
Well, he also, you know, implied pretty heavily that hospital staff were stealing masks and selling them on the black market.
Well, you know, he did do that, but then I went back and Cuomo said the same thing. Cuomo's the one calling in the state police. I'm not sure why he got into that much trouble for that comment.
Well, I think it just it piles on to his total lack of empathy or ability to do his job.
And I don't know, you probably know this better than I do, Rosemary, but to me it was about the numbers, wasn't it? It was the fact that we were going from 30,000 to 300,000 when the president kept on saying that they were mysteriously disappearing. I think Cuomo was talking about some, not this huge number.
I'm sorry,
yeah,
Joe, I'm not following
you. They were complaints coming from the doctors, from the hospitals, he was saying. Cuomo made it sound like we're going to investigate the doctors' complaints. Trump made it sound like we're investigating the doctors.
And called on the press to do it. interestingly. Also.
Yeah, the press has to figure out what's going on. I love that.
Yeah, well, that's because he can't.
Andre says the coronavirus is being called the enemy, and it is, but more importantly, it's also the messenger. And unless we're able to embrace that definition, our long-term response will lack the kind of vision that we all desperately need to cultivate. Ben writes, what is the plight of the tens of thousands of immigrants trapped in cages and squalid living conditions? What about their schooling? What about their health? Well, I think that would fall into... That would fall into Jim's description earlier of all the things we're not being told, right?
Right, the things that are not being addressed, but we know they must be enormous issues here and around the world. People who are being detained for whatever reason, people who are in prisons and our jails, stuck somewhere in the court systems. The ripple effects of this are so complicated and dire. And to be distracted by this kind of circus atmosphere in these press briefings is, again, I say it's not only what's being said, which is problematic enough, it's what's not being addressed.
Jean is helping us out with the worldview. I received an email from my cousin, who is a physician in Rome, after expressing how serious things are. He wrote in capital letters, quote, "Your president is an idiot." So there is the worldview. Thank you, Gene, for sharing that. We go to David, who said, it's obvious to me that Trump knew that Easter was just a pie-in-the-sky date to reopen. He only said Easter to appease his base. He knew that he'd backtrack, as he always does. He knows how to work the crowd. I hope that was the case. I don't know, though, honestly.
I don't think so. This guy, who reminds me more and more of Phineas T. Bluster from the Howdy Doody show, just says whatever comes to his head at a particular moment, and he doesn't think about it. He doesn't think about the consequences or what it means. I just think he's jerky.
A few days,
and I think it's more sinister than that. I think he's perfectly happy to exchange lives for the return to the market.
What do you mean to the return to the market?
Yeah.
Back to businessmen. A lot of people dying, but business returned. He'd be, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, I mean, just look at it. Who are the most vulnerable here? Senior citizens. So if more, I mean, I can't imagine this is what's going through his head. Well, if more senior citizens die, then we don't have to pay as much out in Medicare and Social Security, right? I mean, that's part of his warped thinking,
and
I'm sure.
And he blames it on disease, not on his policies.
That's right, right. And, you know, at the beginning of all of this, I'm sure they were thinking, well, you know, people with health insurance will be okay, but the ones who aren't, which are mostly poor and, in their perspective, people of color, well, if they die, that's okay, too, because, you know, we have Stephen Miller pushing some of the most racist policies this country has implemented since, you know, slavery. So it's really, you know, just this whole benign, I don't even want to call it benign. It's really a malignant malaise of how to deal with this crisis where they really just don't care about the people. It's really that simple. He only cares about whether or not he's getting ratings.
And this has been, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. Go ahead.
I was saying that I think the one saving grace for us in this has been our decentralized system, that Trump has far less power in this than he does, say, in immigration, and that governors and mayors and sometimes even lower than that, town boards, are making decisions based on saving lives, not the president of the United States.
I'm sure that over the years, Alan has told his students again and again and again, that's if you don't understand state and local government in the United States, you really don't understand how this country works. And I think you're right, Rosemary. We see that's a piece, an important piece of how we govern in this country. And it's turning out to be useful in many cases, though the absence of leadership at the top level is still a big problem. But you're right.
It's why Cuomo.
I would like to see one effect of the Trump presidency being that we, as we fix laws that we thought were laws, were only traditions, that we decentralize even more. Immigration should not be completely in his hand. Congress and states should have more power. Same with education. And they're actually, the governors are even working among themselves better than they ever had. You saw Cuomo reaching out to Rhode Island saying, hey, I don't like that policy. Can you fix it? And they did. They changed it. That's the way it should work. You don't need Trump for that.
Libby,
but
you were saying?
What you do need Trump to do is stop the price gouging and put limits on how much companies can charge for ventilators and masks. And he's not. He's letting the free market reign here at a time when we need to rein in the free market. And states are now having to compete against one another.
You know, you guys, you just mentioned some of the changes that may come after this crisis is all over. And one that I would love to see, and I think may well happen, is assuming this guy gets defeated, which I think he will. Unlike a lot of other people, it's now 50-50, in the polls. I think he's going to get defeated. I think he's going to get defeated big because so many people are so angry, But I think that we're going to find all kinds of reasons to put limitations on presidential power, which has basically been so abused during this time. I really believe that.
The end of the imperial presidency.
Could be. I mean, and of the irresponsible, outrageous presidency. I mean, the idea that I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, which still stands out, or this is a democratic, you know, this rhetoric. This is a democratic plot, this coronavirus. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not hearing much about that, but I keep repeating it again and again and again because it really does represent the fact that he's quite mad.
Yeah, although this move toward, you know, much more centralized power in the office of the presidency it precedes Trump. I mean, what you're talking about, Alan, is certainly true, but this is a long-term trend. And if, in fact, we will see a reversal of that trend, that would be really very interesting for American politics.
Let's take one more letter and then we'll go to a break. A few days ago, Tom says Trump announced that Betsy DeVos would appear soon to speak to teachers of America. Did I miss it? The recovery of our public education?
Yes, you did. She was on the other day. You missed it. Yes, DeVos was on and that, you know, little gang of...
Yep.
Of dismissed experts who wait until Trump is speaking, and then she came out and she talked.
The reality that Trump has surrounded himself with an inept, unqualified cabinet just exacerbates the total uselessness of his administration, says Tom. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have many more letters. We have much more to discuss, and we will do so with you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Jim Ketterer, and Rosemary Armeo making up the group. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Louise writes, as a progressive resident of New York State and formerly New York City, I think Rhode Island's actions are fine. People are acting selfishly and stupidly all over, and I'm glad to see the government take action. There is no constitutional right to spread disease.
Well, the problem is that are they really spreading diseases? Are people who have two homes or going to relatives and they're going to stay in those other places, which, of course, they have a complete legal right to do, is that really spreading disease? It's not like they're going into grocery stores and coughing on the toilet paper.
You know, Louise describes herself as a progressive. And I've always thought of progressives as people who understand how to share and to empathize. And there is a... did I say something bad? There is at this stage of the game, a panic. That's what happens in an emergency like that. We've seen it here in my little town of Great Barrington. We've seen it in other places, which is you are not welcome here, even if you own a home here. Even if you're going to self-quarantine, we don't want you here. Who do you think you are? Coming here. And that is very disturbing. We see it with Rhode Island doing it. We see it with small towns upstate doing it. And we see it with self-proclaimed progressives doing it.
Yeah, and Alan, you were talking before about the things that may continue on after this crisis is over. Right. And, you know, with these tensions exacerbated between upstate and downstate and different states, or people going to Western Massachusetts from other places, how much of that will linger on after? What will be the consequences going forward? It's interesting to imagine how it would play out, and unsettling.
Yep.
Let's bat around this letter, if we can. This from Jay, who says, one of the things that the Founding Fathers never anticipated is the presidency being occupied by an autocrat and the legislature backing him. This is the most serious problem in our constitutional democracy. If the president is incompetent and his party is in power and backs him, we have no option. That's because he controls the dissemination of funds and the administration of government. Can this be fixed?
Yes, it can. It's called
And what they anticipated was that people would see this and vote them out in the next election. So it falls back to us to do something about this.
No, I think that's right, Rosemary. I think, in fact, we see that. We see that this is a time when somebody's got to stand up. I truly believe that the reaction to this guy and to his people in the Senate, for example, is going to be immense. I think they're going to get voted out of office.
I'm sorry. I think that another way that it was anticipated, if you look at the Federalist Papers and the discussions on what were called in there factions, really meaning parties, and kind of the danger of factions, the danger of hyper-partisanship, and will, in fact, there'll be some accounting for all of this once this crisis is over.
Yep. Okay, we got a letter from David who asks, which has a subject line, eggs. The wholesale price of eggs has just tripled, according to this morning's Marketplace Morning Report. Are consumers going to be price gouged at the very moment they are being laid off by the millions?
It's a great question. This is not gouging. This is supply and demand. Go in and try to find eggs and toilet paper. There's a reason it's going up. It's because people are worried. They want to have it in their house, and they're buying it in quantities not seen before. I don't think it's gouging.
Well, no, it's gouging. Based on what you've just said, that's the basis for it, all right. But there's somebody who says, I can get more for it than I could get before, and therefore I'm going to raise the price. No, it's gouging.
What's the difference between capitalism and gouging, then?
Nothing.
But I heard a report on NPR the other day about, yes, the hoarding has been a big problem and price gouging is a big problem. But as the longer this goes on, we will see certain things that we're used to seeing all over the country all year round as supply lines will not work perfectly in all of these cases, and certain things won't be as available, and or the price will go up dramatically because there are just fewer of those things available.
Right.
Edie says, what's not being reported on either CNN or MSNBC, I heard a comment that makes sense. Trump is monopolizing the 5, 6, 7 o'clock news when local news might report on what's happening regarding the virus and hospital conditions, which is interesting. Good point. We go to James, who says, remember when 6 senators committed insider trading and profited off a pandemic, and then 24 hours later, everybody forgot about it and pretended that it never happened? Remember that? There's that. Alan, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here, and I'm very interested in what everybody is saying.
Oh, okay. I heard a noise, and I was afraid that we had lost you. Okay.
No, that was somebody else's noise.
Okay. All right. That is fine. Rita says, don't be so hard on Dr. Birx. She's just doing that thing that many accomplished women have to do to stay in positions of authority, bowing and scraping and mollifying powerful men. Even the men have to do this with Trump. Birx is simply more expert, practiced, and opaque about it.
So it's not her fault. Let me see if I get this straight.
Who wrote that? Was that a man or a woman who wrote that?
I will tell you in just a second, because I may have hit the delete button just a little too fast. I apologize. Hold on. Go ahead to Alan's question.
Well, it's outrageous. First of all, I thought it was from a woman. I may be wrong.
Rita. Rita wrote it.
Yeah, Rita. So,
Rita, from a woman.
So, no matter
what. We have lived it, and it's true, but that's exactly the reason why I think what she's doing is so outrageous. She needs to stop it. We no longer are doing that.
Well,
Libby,
she should be another Fauci.
Libby was the one who was dropped. I apologize.
I'm back.
You're back. Okay, great. Go ahead,
Hi,
Alan.
Libby.
Hi. What were we talking about?
We got a letter, a very interesting letter.
You want me to read it again?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I found it somewhat outrageous. Go
all
ahead.
All right. Rita writes, this is on Deborah Birx. Don't be so hard on Dr. Birx. She's just doing that thing that many accomplished women have to do to stay in positions of authority, bowing and scraping and mollifying powerful men. Even the men have to do this with Trump. Birx is simply more expert, practiced, and opaque about it.
Oh, please. You know, the life of the entire country is on the line here. So many people. You know, I'm on one hand, I'm happy that Fauci is still there because we have somebody with the brains and the skills that we need. On the other hand, I would love for him to leave and be able to speak out freely because he'd have a media platform like no other. She needs to not be so. So,
obsequious.
Another nicer word for, you know, kissing
obsequious.
Up.
Obsequious.
Yes, obsequious.
I think Libby is right, but I do
she's
think
not
the letter
doing
writer
any
is also right.
All right, one at
that's
a time.
Exactly what. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Libby, finish your thought, and then we'll go to Rosemary.
Okay. She's not doing women any favor by being so obsequious to him and being such a tool, because all she's doing is bucking him up. And saying, yes, oh, he's doing the right thing, he's doing good. At the beginning, she wasn't like this. At the beginning, she was standing on her own. They must have gotten to her. I mean, who knows what kind of constitution this woman has and whether or not she could stand up to a negative tweet. And I think that's what everyone is fearful of. And look, we've got people on the right now going after Dr. Fauci. There's a whole conspiracy thing going on about him, that he's trying to undermine Trump's reelection campaign by saying the truth. So, you know, reality is on a whole different plane now. I mean,
you know, that's so interesting that you say that, because you really have created a very interesting scenario here. The president clearly wants to get rid of Fauci.
Mm-hmm.
Fauci's a pain in his rear end. And Fauci keeps contradicting him, which is one thing this guy can't stand, right? So but he hasn't got the cojones to do it himself and to fire him in this case. He will, but not yet. So all of a sudden,
hold on.
So all of a sudden, you have this upsurge in right wing Trumpian people saying Fauci's a bad guy. I wonder where that's coming from.
Mm-hmm. We know
people
where
are saying.
Coming from.
Yeah, people are saying. That's right.
People are saying, right.
Rosemary,
we know
go
where
ahead.
It's coming from.
No, I'm having trouble getting in here and not stepping on everybody else, but I think Libby said basically what I wanted to say about the professor. I think both the letter writer and she are right, that she sees her job as working on the disease, and I think she, as I've mentioned, got Trump to back down on this Easter thing by showing him data, and I think she sees that as her job. It's that old idea that, oh, we're the adults in the room and we'll take care of them, but it didn't work for the generals, and it isn't going to work for the doctors either.
Right, and she's keeping him in office, don't you see? I mean,
right, yes.
Asbestos would say.
Asbestos
yes,
would say.
Right.
In this, a reading from Festus. Andrew says, talk by Trump of an early back to work is intended to inoculate himself come October if the economy isn't worth bragging about at the time. Then Mark says, the president seems just to want everyone to thank him for doing his job. Imagine if an ordinary employee went into work with that attitude. And to add insult to injury, not once has he offered any condolences to the families of those who have passed away.
Yeah, but the basic premise is he wants to be thanked for doing his job. He's not doing his job. He's doing a terrible job. He's a guy who denied that there was such an epidemic going on and all the rest of it. And we wasted months and days and weeks and months. Are you kidding? Well, he wants to be thanked for doing that?
Yeah. you're right. My favorite argument of his supporters is now is not the time to lay blame. We have to look forward. And so Republican congressmen and governors are all saying that. It's just ridiculous. Of course we should be evaluating his performance.
If Obama was the president, they would be having a field day. Absolute field day.
Just a couple letters before in a minute here. Maybe two. Doreen says, I have read that Trump will not comply with key transparency measures in the coronavirus stimulus bill. What are your thoughts?
He has said that he would not, and it'll be up to Congress to keep stepping on him until he does. I think Nancy Pelosi's up to the job.
And Ellen says, does anyone know where the ventilators that have been promised from the federal stockpiles to various blue states have gone? And more importantly, who's diverting them? Is this Trump's playing God and bestowing them magnanimously on the states where the governors support him?
Well, he certainly has indicated that if you're not his friend, you're not hearing from him. He said that. I mean, we know that. He's gone after Inslee of Washington State in the most disgraceful fashion of all, even Pence. Even Pence has had good things to say about Inslee. That's very interesting.
And he's gone after the governor of Michigan.
Of the woman, she's not just doesn't like him, but she's a woman beside. So he's now calling her half Whitmer. Charming, such a grown-up man.
The other thing is that the Daily Beast had an article today that Newsom from California, the governor, Gavin Newsom, says that the ventilators sent by the feds don't work.
First of all, let's assume they do work for a second. You're right, Libby, to raise that. Nevertheless, let's assume they do work. Cuomo was very honest about it. He said, we project what's going to be happening here. So we keep asking for more, and we keep putting them out there. It's not as if, what do you want to do, wait till people are dying before you get them? No, we see those death rates going up every day. It's exactly the right thing to do. Get what you need.
All right, we're going to take a break, pause for a moment. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org is how you can get in touch with us. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Jim Ketterer, and Rosemary Armeo making up the panel this morning. Your letters for them and all of us talking together after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Making up the group this morning, Alan Chartok, Libby Post, James Ketterer, and Rosemary Armeo. And we thank you very much for being with us. So let's go to some topics, and we'll go back to some letters that we have. There was a really interesting article in the New York Times, I thought anyway, that was put out in how much should the public know about who has the coronavirus? Amid calls for more transparency, a debate is raging among public health experts over how much data on the spread of the virus should be released. This comes in as the coronavirus spreads across the United States. The limited disclosure of data by officials would seem to be a footnote to the suffering and economic disruptions that the disease is causing. But medical experts say that how much the public should know has become a critical question that will help determine how the United States confronts this outbreak and future ones. Residents are clamoring to see whether the virus has been detected in their neighborhood so they can take more steps to avoid any contact. American researchers are starved for data, unlike their colleagues in other countries who are harnessing rivers of information from their more centralized medical systems. And local politicians complain that they cannot provide basic information on the spread of the virus to their constituents. In the perennial tug of war between privacy and transparency in the United States, privacy appears to be winning in the coronavirus pandemic. That, again, from the New York Times. But I think it's a really interesting point and one I would like to talk about. James, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult balance. We were talking before about how, whether it's panic, et cetera, you see some people, this situation bringing out the worst in some people. And the idea that people want to know where the hotspots are, but who's creating those hotspots. And so if we start to see kind of a naming and shaming, if you are from X city or Y city, you're not welcome in my city, because we know that's a hot spot and you're just absolutely not welcome. And, you know, targeting kind of individual people from individual places could really spin out of control terribly. At the same time, people want to know, they need to know. I mean, I think it's kind of how this information is disseminated and in what context, so people can make better decisions but not overreact.
But, you know, when you see the people who are getting the disease, people like Prince Charles, right, and others, it does, in whether fortuitously or not, set up an understanding that everybody's in this together, that we all get it, and that some people at the top are getting it too. And so I think that's very helpful. At least that's where I'm coming from. I think if everybody's getting it and we're being told that actors are getting it and that baseball players are getting it, why shouldn't everybody be getting it? It's a very different situation.
If you have let's say, you're someone who lives in Oneida County, and you find out that there are three new cases in Oneida County. If you live in Oneida County, you probably want to know where those people are, right? I mean, I think that's just natural interest.
Yeah, sure.
So, but then how do you find, if they're not going to tell you, if they're going to tell you the cases? I mean, look, small towns are small towns. You're going to find out eventually. But what do you do? And then how do those, because the hospitals have to, and we saw this in the early stages of the virus where there were cases, and I mean, this continues to be true, where someone, they say, oh, this person in this county has the virus. And you go, oh, okay, all right, that's all right, noted. And then they say, oh, by the way, this person was a receptionist at this place, or this person was dispensing coffee at this convenience store for 9 days. Well, then things change, and then they're looking for those people who would have been there. So it's hard to try to protect that person as well as find as many people that would have been affected.
Well, Joe,
it's just an excuse to keep information secret, which is the tendency of bureaucrats. Florida is doing it. It's giving out tons more information about who has the virus and where they are than any other state, proving once again that we can handle the information. In those instances where people are targeted, for example, I was going to a supermarket in Williamstown this weekend, and people warned me that my New York State license plate might be a problem because people in Massachusetts don't want New Yorkers in there. If that were true, I had no problem at all, by the way, but if it were true, that's a police matter. It doesn't have to do with bureaucrats giving out information.
Okay, so can I just chime in here?
Yes, please.
Okay, first of all, I've been contacted because I was in the presence of someone who might have been in the presence of somebody. Okay, and the Albany County Department of Health has been very good about reaching out to people who might have been in a place where someone who has tested positive has been, and then going through the rigor of that, okay? My fear is, Joe Blow has the virus, and you will have not the outpouring of humanity that one would hope, but you would have the outpouring of what we saw during the AIDS crisis, where people were marginalized.
Yeah, exactly.
And brutalized, besides marginalized.
No one is saying let out the names of people or the addresses of people. This is aggregated information. Again, Florida is doing it. You can say how many in a particular place. You can say what gender they are. You can give out lots of information.
You know how many there are in Albany County.
One at a time.
We know how many there are in Albany County. That number comes out every day. The governor's office is putting those numbers out. And then the health department do their jobs.
That's not true, Rosemary.
They are doing their jobs. The health departments are doing their jobs and doing the outreach to the affected individuals so that
hold on. I love you both, but you have to. I can only hear one of you at a time. Go ahead. So Libby, make your point, and then we'll go to Rosemary.
Okay. I just want us to be careful about, we've got five cases in Steventown, out in Rensselaer County. And that's not true, folks, okay? I'm just making that as an example. It's a small town.
it's a rural town, and, you know, people will just start doing their thing in terms of, oh, my God, I'm going to be paranoid about this, and I think anybody in this community can give me this disease. I mean, I remember what it was like in the late 80s and early 90s around AIDS. I remember. I lived through that, and it was not pretty. And I think that we need to recognize the hysteria that comes with these kinds of highly communicable diseases and recognize what it can mean for people, and that the health department is – Albany County, New York State Health Department, they are saying how many cases are in each county and letting the county health departments do their job of notifying people.
Rosemary, I want to hear from you. I just want to read one little portion of this article, which makes the point that you've been saying about Florida, which I think is interesting just as to compare. Across the United States, there's even less consistency. New York is listing cases by age bracket, gender, and borough, despite calls for more localized reporting. Connecticut lists data by town. Florida provides its residents with a wealth of data on the pandemic. The state's Department of Health has a detailed dashboard and report showing the spread of the virus, rich with data on the cities affected, the number of people tested, the age brackets of patients, whether they are Florida residents, and the number of cases in nursing homes. So you'd like to see more of that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And again, I don't think it threatens individuals, and I don't think that the comparison to AIDS is exactly right, because that was stigmatizing. This is fear. People want to – I don't see anybody shunning.
Do I
get to talk
yes,
or not?
Yes, you do.
Let me just make my point. I think it's one more excuse not to give out information. In no instance ever in history has withholding information resulted in better social behavior. The more information you have, the better. And if that's it, for example, in Stevenstown, if there's five people, I bet you I already know who they are. And this is mythical, I understand. It's just a made-up example. But on the other hand, if I didn't, I should have the right to know that there are five people in my small town who have it. I need to be extra careful. And that is information. I want.
I'd like to
keeping
register.
Keeping it secret doesn't change
yes.
the reality of any of that.
All right.
I'd like to register.
I just want to make one point,
okay.
And that is it's the fear that leads to the stigmatizing of
exactly.
people.
All right.
I have something to say about that, too. But, Alan, please go ahead.
No, I want to go very quickly. There's a front page story in the local newspaper this morning, the Berkshire Eagle. In response to growing alarm about people fleeing to the Berkshires to escape cities besieged by the coronavirus pandemic, one county legislator is asking Governor Charlie Baker to shut down the short-term rental industry, at least in Berkshire County, and that's Representative William Smitty Pignatelli. I don't know that I like this one bit. This is catering to the fear that Rosemary and Libby are talking about.
And we can
North
also
Carolina
see
has
the
that short-term rental has stopped.
Okay,
yeah, we can
James.
also see the stigmatizing happening even from our Secretary of State, who was in a conversation with his colleagues in the G7, the Group of Seven, the leading seven economies in the world, and they wanted to put out a communique about this issue, and he. Blocked that communique because he was insisting that the United States wanted it to be called the Wuhan virus. That has not only an effect on kind of diplomacy at the high level, but it trickles down. It sends a message to people who are already afraid, acting in some cases on their worst instincts. And I think Libby's right. I think the potential for people being targeted and people being... people being attacked. We've seen this happening and feeling like they're getting a message from the top that this is okay. It's terribly dangerous.
When he
Listen,
called it
I
the
think
Chinese
it's
hold on, hold on, hold on.
And shunning and stigmatizing, if you find that your next door neighbor has coronavirus, you need to stay away from them. That's the preferred behavior. That's completely different than finding out they have AIDS and you're refusing to drink at the same table as them. Those are two different things.
Okay, but
Libby.
When he called it the Chinese virus, the incidence of hate crimes against Asian Americans went up.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not defending
okay,
that.
To Jim's point. Okay? If your
but
neighbor
Jim's
has...
Jim's point is different than the one we're making.
We're
That's
being,
not... If, a brand
hold
new
on,
human
hold on,
being.
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Okay.
If we're being decent human beings and we find out our neighbor has the coronavirus, we reach out to them and say, what can I do to help you?
That's what I would do.
Well, if we're being decent, we do that with someone who has AIDS as well, Libby. But
yeah, I get that.
You're saying that the way to control bad behavior is to keep back information. And I'm saying that's completely inefficient.
All right. Let's go to some letters and we'll calm everybody down. Jay says, the Trump camp is now busy pointing fingers at China over this mess, and although I would agree there is plenty of blame to go around, China downplayed it, the World Health Organization downplayed it, and Trump, every other hour, is still downplaying it. The common thread through all of this is that it would have been bad for business to have pushed the panic button early on, so they all took the chance that it was just another flu. Life seems to be cheap to the big business bunch. There are lessons in all this. I wonder if we will learn them. Thank you, Jay, for that. Evelyn.
I don't think it's accurate that the World Health Organization downplayed it. I would have to see evidence of that. And I have seen people on the right saying that they wouldn't believe anything from the WHO because it's one of those UN organizations and they have a hidden agenda. So I don't agree with that piece of that letter.
Good point. Stephen writes, well, of course, Trump expects to be thanked for anything that he does, where he has to climb out of his own little selfish world of narcissism and think about somebody else's needs besides his own. For him, this is so extraordinarily difficult that for anything he does in this regard, he expects a Medal of Honor. Peter says, you guys absolutely rock. Thank you very much for clarifying many of the thoughts that we have. Thank you for your hard work and dedication. God bless you all and be safe. Thank you for that note. I appreciate my neighbors who own second homes here in the Catskills, says Doug. As a carpenter, I owe a good deal of my income to their needing work done on their homes. However, my wife is a nurse, and it enrages me to watch my city-dwelling neighbors continually going into public and not adhering to the quarantine guidelines. Stay home. You're putting my wife, my family, and neighbors at risk.
You know, Joe, I think some of this is worth discussing, and that is, are we going too far? Are we not going far enough in terms of protecting ourselves? I have a very good journalist friend whose partner told him that he was not to touch the mail when it came, you know, in the mailbox because there could be coronavirus on the mail. You know, we are trying our best to obey all of the rules, but is there ever enough protecting ourselves? You know what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's hard to know, and you can drive yourself nuts thinking about it. Because if you put rubber gloves on when you do the mail, and then when you take off the rubber gloves, is the stuff from the mail still on the outside of the rubber glove when you put the rubber glove in the in the garbage can? I mean, it can just snowball, and I understand. But then you go and wash your hands, right? And it's all we're all learning a lot here. I this weekend my big thing was in watching all of those videos about how to wash your hands is do not ignore your thumbs.
How can you?
Well, if you just rub them together, what's in between your thumb and your forefinger
doesn't get.
So you have to address the thumb is the way it was described to me.
Okay.
There's great YouTube videos on this.
Yes, there really are. There's some great stuff. I've watched them all, Jim.
There was also a great video that was going around on social media about a woman who was like, you people who are leaving your gloves used in the parking lots of the supermarkets. You know, you're just being stupid, and this is how you take care of it. It was very funny and humorous, and it made the point not to leave your gloves all over the place. If you
what
know,
are you supposed
throw
to
them
do?
Out.
Well, a garbage
throw them
can.
Out. You put to the other because they're you know the plastic or whatever it is. And you pull and roll them up, and then you put them into the garbage can, and then you have some spray with you or wipes, and you wipe your hands down.
They look gross if they're just laying there.
This may be a question for Judith, but have you noticed that environmental measures are all out the window in because of health concerns? So no more reusable bags. We're back to plastic. No more
in
recycling
some places,
in many places.
We did. We did discuss this on Friday with Judith, who is, as you would guess, horrified. So we'll stick with that. Well, let's go to the letters once again. Mike says a couple weeks ago, local television station reported on a gun shop being open in Schenectady. I'm scratching my head as to how gun shops are considered an essential business, likewise liquor stores. But yes, both gun shops and I believe, well, I know liquor stores have. And
liquor stores are gun shops are not on the essential list.
They're still open, though.
Yeah, well, I've been looking. I mean, because I got animal shelters on the essential list, and I keep going back to look to see what else, and I watch the governor, and I read all this stuff. I haven't seen gun stores on the essential list. I could be wrong. I'll go back and look, but every time I read it, I never see them.
Christy writes, releasing any identifiable information, names, addresses, street names, GPS locations of COVID-19 positive individuals not only violates HIPAA, but also risks creating a mob mentality of ostracism.
Let me repeat that. No one ever anywhere has asked for that information.
Donna says we want tests and we want them now, and we want the 5-minute tests like other countries. We want the sickness and death and fear to end. We want to see our children and grandchildren again. Is this too much to ask of the so-called greatest country in the world? Well, that boils it down, doesn't it?
I mean, what are you going to do? You got an emergency here. We all want the things that the letter writer says. The Shark Talk certainly do. But nevertheless, you got to shelter in place. There's no question. You got to self-quarantine. Otherwise, every time you walk out of the house, you are creating an opportunity to get the virus.
We got this from Candy, who is helping me with this. When you take off your rubber gloves, you roll them down from the wrist so that they come off your hands inside out. Okay,
right.
That's handy. All right. See, we're learning all this stuff. This is good. Chris says, we all know the numbers of confirmed cases isn't representative of the true amount of virus in our communities anyway. Forget the confirmed numbers. We all need to act like our communities are saturated with infections. Isn't that the truth here?
Yes.
Yes.
We thank Chris for that letter. Let's go to... One moment. Let's go to James, who says, as always, you guys are the best. Thanking you for all you do. And we'll send a necessary small contribution. NPR reported this morning that 200 inmates in New York City's notorious Rikers Island prison have contracted COVID-19. What no one is talking about elsewhere is in the state is all the other nonviolent prisoners are now being held in unsanitary and downright potentially deadly conditions. How do we get members of the press to ask Governor Cuomo about this potentially explosive situation in the New York State penitentiaries? I would add, I know that there are questions about prisons throughout this country, not just in New York.
Well, what do you do? I mean, what do you do? You've got these awful prisons, and just think about Rikers for a minute. Terrible institution. Filled with some people who have done some heinous things, right? Do you just let everybody out?
Well, they're not being let out. They're being put in. This letter writer is saying they're being put in places that are with very poor conditions, even worse than where they were.
No question about it, Joe. You're right, and the letter writer is right. The question I'm having, considering the letter, is what to do.
And then you also have to try, have to try to contain the spread to keep it to an absolute minimum within that facility. Back to your question then, how do you do that? Steve says, gun shops are not open any longer in our region as of last week. That is from Steve. Another Steven says, what time do I have to hit here? Oh, okay. We have to take a break. We're late for break. Let me do that, and then we'll get back to our letters. We will do our final round here. We welcome everyone. Keep your letters short and to the point. That would be very helpful as we try to get as many as we can over the next couple of minutes. We'll continue with our roundtable panel after this short break. Good morning and welcome. We welcome you, panel, at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, political consultant at Libby Post. We have James Ketterer, currently Dean of the School of Continuing Education at the American University, Cairo, and investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Jim, were you going to say something? I'm sorry, I think I...
Just one more thing about this information and sharing of information. You know, I think now, as opposed to previous health crises, we are able to also collect information in different ways. And I think that can be useful, but always it can be, you know, it's a balance to be struck. For instance, there was an article that I saw recently on governments, federal, state, and local governments that are collecting cell phone data and seeing where there are still people congregating, where how people are moving around and how that might somehow map onto the spread of the virus. That's probably really useful information to have, as long as, you know, the identifying information is stripped away, as Rosemary is saying, nobody's asking for that. But, you know, we do have lots of tools in many different sorts of ways. And I think there's a lot of smart people out there working on figuring out how those mechanisms can be used.
That's a really good point. And as far, but then again, you're going to have people who are say, but just the fact that you know where I am, even if you don't know who I am, but you know where I am, is bothersome.
Hey, Joe.
And maybe a little creepy. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, just for the sake of keeping WAMC alive, our Jordan Yoxall, our wonderful chief financial officer, just wrote a note. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, recently signed by President Trump, includes provisions designed to help the nonprofit sector. Among other things, the act allows for deductions of up to $300 for charitable contributions for individuals. This deduction is above the line, meaning not an itemized deduction. This act effectively relaxes some of the effects of the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Previously, the Trump administration had reduced the deductibility of charitable contributions through increases in itemized deduction thresholds. I just thought I'd mention it. Not that I think that anybody gives the money because of deductions. Our experience shows they don't. And we're way ahead of where we have been. Nevertheless, it's worth noting.
Absolutely. And an interesting part to that giant piece of legislation that was passed last week. We have some letters here in our last 15 minutes or so with each other. We go to Stuart, who says, I see no reason not to call the virus what it is, either the Wuhan virus or the Chinese virus. Both the Wuhan and Chinese governments handled the virus very poorly, and as a result, the rest of the world has paid very dearly, both in a loss of life and financial cost. There should be some stigma attached to the virus to remind people of the consequences of covering up and withholding vital information with global consequences.
I couldn't disagree more with that letter. Number one, I think that that undermines the notion that this is really a global fight against this virus. You know, nationalizing it, one country versus another, I think is both inaccurate and also unhelpful. And secondly, as we were talking about before, we see people being targeted, being specifically targeted because of the way that they look, and in some cases, acts of violence carried out against them. So I absolutely disagree with that letter.
We also really don't know.
Historically, in 1918, the killer flu was called the Spanish flu, and that was basically because Spain did it right. They were the first ones to acknowledge and begin fighting it. So we've gone from almost a, is it a reward to name it Spanish flu? I'm not sure. It's stupid. We should just call it what it is. COVID-19 is the best word for it, maybe.
We have this from Stephen, who says, I see a little concern about Cuomo or any authority giving back or reversing executive orders which suspend some laws. Do you expect unrest here, which is popping up in Italy?
Well, you know, there is a possibility here that because of the way this country has been run, that there will be those who espouse, some kind of revolt. I am not one of them, and I certainly hope it doesn't happen. Nevertheless, I think when Trump does the kinds of concessions that he's been doing lately after arguing against all of them for so long, he has to have it somewhere in the back of his mind that, you know, people may panic and go into some kind of mode like that.
Anybody else? Okay.
I just think it depends how long this goes on.
Could be.
How serious this is. But I think Alan's concerns are well placed.
Casey says people aren't leaving Trump because Dems haven't offered a better place to go. Pelosi saying Trump is fiddling while she did everything she could to delay aid package. Progressives empathize, like Rosemary a few weeks ago cheering for the coronavirus. That from Casey. Would you like
to? She didn't do anything to stand in the way of the package. I mean, come on. She and Mnuchin negotiated a package that then went to the Senate, where they wanted to give big giveaways to the corporate entities and the big bosses. And she said no to that.
Rosemary, your name was mentioned.
I thought Libby was going to defend me. I certainly have never cheered for the COVID virus. Never.
Sorry, babe.
All right, one more. Evelyn, this is just being one more that doesn't agree with Rosemary. But Evelyn says, I don't agree with Rosemary. I work in the Berkshires and have witnessed the grocery stores packed with New Yorkers, and to say they aren't spreading coronavirus is reckless. No one knows if they are carrying the virus. Anyone who travels to a different area should be self-quarantining for 14 days, and that is not happening, sadly.
This is exactly what I'm talking about, and I really hate it. You know, I'm a full-time resident of the Berkshires, and I got to tell you, I don't like it one bit. It's the kind of panic that leads people to do strange and very stupid things.
You know, Rosemary mentioned this earlier about the license plates, but I mean, you know, like in some cases, my closest store is perhaps in Williamstown. I mean, I just don't – that we all live very close to state lines.
Oh,
I don't
boy.
Know that is a
– Oh, boy.
It's a – an unfair thing. But anyway, would you like to say anything to that letter, Rosemary? Or
nope.
Has it been addressed? Okay. Brent is just being nice. Isn't that nice? Saying, I'm just sending this for the first time as I listen every day, but never send a letter. I live in your listening area, but work in New York City, and as of late have seen the world a bit upside down. My wife and myself are considered essential workers, so we've been still going to work and are isolated from our families. I just wanted to say thank you. Listening to the roundtable keeps us sane. I can't listen to the clown in chief as it raises my blood pressure to intolerable levels, but your show helps to counteract that effect. Keep doing what you're doing. You provide an essential service. Stay safe and be well. And Brent is a lieutenant with the New York Fire Department. So thank you, Brent, and thank you for being so nice. We appreciate that. Also,
and thank you for the work that you're doing.
Really important work. Shay writes about liquor stores and social distancing. The confusion over liquor stores being essential arises from all food and beverage centers being deemed essential. Also interested in the panel's reaction to reports from close friends in Germany and Spain that the social distancing rules are stricter and being enforced than in New York. Should we tighten things up? Well, there certainly have been many calls for that. Does anyone have any other thoughts or suggestions on that point?
I've seen people behaving properly,
which is good. Rosemary?
Yeah. No, I don't think we should be making that decision. I mean, we're the ones who believe in experts.
We also go to Richard, who says Joe Biden was on Meet the Press yesterday acting very presidential. He challenged Trump to use his presidential powers to compel American companies to produce needed medical supplies in this emergency. The former vice president and Democratic frontrunner has been out on not on the campaign trail, but he has been certainly more visible. He was on Sunday news shows. He did a town hall for CNN on Friday night. Is anyone have any response to what they've been hearing from the presumed frontrunner? Also, we should mention that on top of all this, the New York primary date has been changed.
I do. You know, I've been getting a lot of mail about Cuomo for President Joe. And the only way that could happen now, I believe, is if Joe Biden decides, for whatever reason, he looks in the mirror, whatever is going on in his life, and he's already said at one point that he only wanted to run for one term, he turns around and says, you know, after the first ballot, I want to release my delegates to Andrew Cuomo. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Do I think it should happen? Yes, I do.
Anybody else on that? Really? Nobody?
Yeah, I'll say that. I think Biden is in a bad position because I think he's done just fine on the shows, but that's all he can do is go on shows and speak out. I mean, this is where governors and national leaders have to take action, and he has a Democrat running for office. I mean, even Pelosi is doing more than him, and that's the nature of the job. I think Cuomo's faults are still his faults, the same things that made him not as good as Biden for president 2 months ago still are there. No foreign policy experience. He's a bully. He's got some of the same tendencies as Trump. I mean, no, just Cuomo is doing a great job as governor. We are so unused to public officials doing a great job that we immediately want to move him. What about the PETA principle? Keep him where he is. Well, he's needed in New York now, and he's a young man. If he's qualified for president, he'll be qualified in 4 years.
Yes, but what if he loses? What if Biden loses? And right now it does look like Cuomo is enjoying tremendous popularity. I'm not disagreeing with a lot of the stuff you've said, Rosemary. But tremendous popularity. I'm getting all of this mail about, and he looks like an executive. He looks like a guy who, as vice president, for example, could step into the presidential role. I think you're being a little bit cruel, to be honest with you.
I think he's acting presidential.
Yeah, cruel. Yeah. Cruel.
How is that cruel to assess another man as better than him?
Cruel or mean? It's the way you're putting him down. Not good.
Okay. I'm not putting him down. I actually have spoken several times here about what a fabulous job he's doing. I just don't think that because he's doing a great job as governor, we dumped the entire political process to this point and put him in.
Well, because we have an extraordinary situation on our hands here. Let's be honest about that. I would agree with you, except that we have the coronavirus. We have a guy who looks like he's an executive, who the American people has embraced as the anti-Trump alternative. Where's Biden in that? In the mornings, it's Andrew Cuomo doing the discussions that he's been doing. No, I don't think you're right.
Alan, can I remind you of any of the million of protests and complaints you had about Cuomo for many years now, and they are all wiped out because he's doing a good job in an emergency?
Let me put it this way. The one thing I think is important is getting Trump out of there. And number two, I think that it's Cuomo who could do it. And number three, you're right. I have had plenty of objections to the way Cuomo has conducted himself, including getting rid of the Working Families Party, you know, or an approach to that. But and I've said so again and
corruption again. Corruption in office that he's not paid for. There's why are the hospitals in New York so stripped of capacity? His budgeting processes. There's lots of things wrong with him that should not all be forgiven now. Should he be assessed as a possible future presidential candidate? Yeah, but to rush and make a change, no. I don't see it.
We certainly disagree on that.
I want to read just the first paragraph of this article in the Washington Post on Andrew Cuomo, and I'm reading it because I think it's funny. But one odd side effect, writes Sarah Ellison and Ben Terrace, one odd side effect of COVID-19 has been what it does to taste. Even those who have avoided the illness enjoy things they once disliked. Government spending, FaceTiming with family, and Andrew M. Cuomo.
It's true. You know, more people are watching him than just about anything else. He's being presidential. He's showing what leadership can look like or does look like. You know, I mean, we'd miss him in New York, but we would be, you know, it would be a credit if he ended up being in the White House at this point. Yes, he has his problems. No elected official doesn't have a problem, you know, and I get what you're saying, Rosemary. And yes, people have, myself included, have criticized him in the past. But we are at a place in history where leadership is an absolute necessity. And we have a vacuum in Washington, and we see what leadership looks like every single day when he comes on and does his briefings. There's a reason why his briefings are carried nationally. It's because he's being a leader. He's being honest. He's being truthful. He's telling people the facts as he has them. He's not sugarcoating anything, but he's giving solutions, and he's doing the work that needs to be done compared to the Orange Menace, who, you know, is only concerned with his ratings and doing better than The Bachelor. I mean, give me a break.
Well, again, I don't disagree with any of you saying, but this is a false comparison. What we're doing is comparing with Biden. Biden is also a leader. He has demonstrated that many times in the past, which is why he's the front leader now, the front runner right now in the campaign.
I understand that. And the thing is this, it's like it's very hard. You know, the presidential election has been totally thrown. It's now like B-level news. I mean, nobody's caring about it.
And right.
Unless Biden was a governor, you know, he's not going to get the kind of coverage that anybody is getting.
And look at the polls.
Or Trump is going to get because of the crisis that
we're
in.
We are out of time.
No.
So, I mean, maybe you give me the last word there. Thank you all very much. We appreciate it. We'll be right back.